welcome everyone to Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of CCLs that provides supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training and opportunities to really dive in deep on climate change and effective climate advocacy. And tonight's topic is specifically on handling difficult lobby scenarios. To get us there, what I'd love to do is over to both Tamara and Dawn to introduce themselves, our featured speakers tonight, and then we'll go over the agenda.
So I'm Tamara Staten. I am the CCL Regional Coordinator for the Greater Pacific Northwest. This will be my 10th or 11th conference, CCL conference. 2012, climate change became my priority, and I transitioned to work with as a consultant, a professional development coach, specializing in working on conflict resolution and interpersonal communication.
Thanks, Tamara. My name is Don Adieu. I'm a CCL's regional director for the Southeast. I have a 9-state region. This will be my 9th June conference, and I started as a group of one in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, back in 2011. I had the opportunity to start the first chapter in North Carolina, and I've been able to grow our region since. So I'm delighted to be here tonight. I've got lots of experience on the Hill and some fantastic stories too. So I look forward to chatting with y'all tonight, and hopefully at the end of it, you'll feel prepared and ready to go no matter what gets thrown at you on the Hill.
Well, we'll be in great hands with both of you. Thank you again for joining us, Tamara and Dawn, tonight. And what I'd love to do really quick is just review our Preparing for Lobby Day training sequence. We are right in the middle of our sequence. Again, none of these are required. They're all just available for people that might want to brush up on a particular topic. And tonight's agenda is going to specifically focus on responding with engagement on hard conversations that you might have in your meeting. Don and Tamara are going to demonstrate some bad, better, and best responses for each of these initial scenes to really help give a window in, and keeping in mind that there's not really just one best response. I'll also invite all of our attendees again to share their own recommendations of what they found useful in the chat for each situation as we're moving through them. We're also going to talk about common temptations and how to avoid them, having a chance to jump into some other difficult situations to think through ahead of time, discuss some potential hot button topics, as well as handling pushback from others. So without further ado, I will step back and I'll pass it to you. And thank you all for being here tonight. We'll jump right in.
So Tamara and I are going to go through some examples of some of the more common concerns that you'll get while lobbying. What about China? Problems with the word tax, and disbelief that our policy could ever be revenue neutral. Each of these topics has the potential to derail your meeting. Some of these are more likely to come from conservative or liberal offices, and some might be heard in both. Hopefully, after Tamara and I demonstrate a bad, better, and best response to each of these common problems, you have an idea of what you might say or do when you run into these situations. Remember this. Stay focused and respond to what they say and hear, not what you think they should hear. For this section, Tamara and I will take turns being the member of Congress and a CCL volunteer. Then Brett will debrief each section. First, Tamara's the staffer who raises a concern regarding China and India in a conservative office. We'll start with a bad response.
Don, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
A lot of Republicans fail to acknowledge what China is doing to address climate change. So obviously that's a bad response. Here's a better response.
Don, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
China and India are important. The good thing about the Energy Innovation Act is no matter what they do or don't, we have more jobs, increase our competitiveness, and the air and water in our district will be cleaner. So that's a good response. It sounds like I've internalized the laser talk, but here's a best response.
Don, it doesn't matter what we're doing because China and India are burning so much coal.
That's a valid concern, Tamara. Would you tell me more about why that's important to you?
Sure. We see it this way. If the U.S. is the only country eliminating coal jobs and coal is a source of energy, then China and India are free riding at our expense, and we can't stop global warming by ourselves.
So what I'm hearing you say is that if there was a way to bring China and India along, then it would be easier for this office to support climate action. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, but there are a lot of other issues we would have to overcome as well.
I can appreciate that, Tamara. Getting back to China and India, I have heard the same concern, and then I heard about how Reagan used a border adjustment to bring other countries along when combating the hole in the ozone layer. Would you like to hear more about what Reagan did to eliminate free riders? And now we'll turn it over to Brett for a debrief.
Yeah, let's take a break here and just kind of focus on what we noticed. So Don's best response really started with that acknowledgement. I think that really was the key thing that distinguished that from the other two. And then he followed that up with a question. He said, "That's a valid concern, Tamara. Could you tell me a little bit more about what that matters to you, Bora?" And if you doubt in any of those cases, Don's great phrase, "tell me more," really, I think, is the key thing to keep relying on in your own meetings to continue to find out that underlying issue or value that might be present with whatever you're having the conversation about. In this example, Don was led to discovering Tamara's underlying value, that China and India, you know, her concern for them free riding. So continuing to use asking questions and listening for values to have that chance to find common ground is really key. And I think the other key emphasis is that when we've discovered that the staffer's real issue in this case was free riding, you know, even with the bad or the good responses, we didn't really address that. We told them what we thought we wanted them to hear. And it's only after that we really asked those clarifying questions and listened that we were able to actually have a dialogue around what their underlying concern might be. So let's try this out again with another scenario. This next topic is the taboo surrounding the word tax. In this example, we'll switch things up. Don's going to be the member of Congress and Tamara will be the CCL volunteer. Action.
Tamara, what you're really talking about is just a tax.
It's a fee, not a tax at all. Not a tax if all the money goes back to households. Okay, so that response, not so good. Here's a better one.
What you're talking about, Tamara, is really just a tax.
Well, we feel good about thinking of this as a fee based on the feedback of former Secretary of State Schultz. He says that if the net proceeds are returned to households, then it's a fee, not a tax. He said taxes pay for the government and that this fee is not doing that. So that's a better response, but here's what we think of as a best response.
What you're talking about, Tamara, is really just a tax.
I've had that same concern, Congressman. I'm fiscally conservative myself, and it sounds to me like reducing the burden on government and our economy is an important priority for you too. Is that correct?
Absolutely. The last thing we need is another social spending program.
Well, know that we share the concern for minimizing government costs. And on this issue, I've turned to other conservatives like President Reagan's former Secretary of State, George Shultz, who's also on our advisory board. Would you be up for having me tell you what I've learned from listening to him?
Sure.
So Secretary Shultz tells us that if we offset the fee revenue minus any admin costs with corresponding rebates to households, then we're not raising revenue to fund government programs. What's your take on that?
Sounds like semantics to me, but there's a lot of semantics in governing.
That's true, and I agree. You know, there are many other economists, in fact, over 3,500 of them across the country, including all the former chairs of the Federal Reserve, who also believe that we need to put the costs of reducing emissions onto the balance sheet of the producers. And when people spend their dividend, it will be good for the economy. So that's what the Energy Innovation Act is designed to do. What are your thoughts about this economist's statement?
All right, we'll pause there again and just do a quick debrief on this element. So on this side of things, I think the key thing to acknowledge again is this formula is pretty straightforward, right? Notice that Tamara's response started with an acknowledgement of really sharing the congressman's concern and then asked permission to proceed and really identified that shared value saying, you know, I've had that same concern myself. She found a way to agree on shared values, which led her to discovering that the underlying issue for Don in this case wasn't just the word tax, but also concern about really government growth. So again, her responses to Don's comment at first really didn't address that, but to be able to underlie that question that really got to what his concerns were and then asking permission to give him our take got to a much deeper conversation. And I think the key thing also just to emphasize on this particular topic is just to recognize and appreciate that revenue, you know, coming into the government is just going to be a straight up tricky issue for a lot of conservatives. You know, when they're ready to hear what you have to say, it's going to be good, as Tamara did, to cite trusted messengers, and especially, you know, be able to not debate into the semantics of whether it's a fee or a tax, but instead pivot to focusing on the solutions and the benefits of the policy. At this point, our next topic is actually going to be a concern that the Energy Innovation Act is never going to be revenue neutral. So at this point, I'll pass it to you, Tamara, to play the Member of Congress, and then Don as the volunteer from CCL. Action.
We won't vote for this because we don't believe it could ever be truly revenue neutral after it gets through Congress.
Okay, so you're telling me that it's you, the very people we voted into office for safeguarding our general welfare, can't be trusted with governing? Okay, so that's a bad response. So here's a better response.
We won't vote for this because we don't believe it could ever be truly revenue neutral after it gets through Congress.
Yeah, we hear this concern sometimes. I like what they did in British Columbia. What they did was build in a provision that if the money didn't go back, the finance minister lost part of their salary. Also, I like what Representative Bob Inglis said about this. If we let this fear prevent us from passing legislation, then we have given up on this experiment we call democracy, and we might as well invite the king back. Okay, so that's a better response. But here's an even better one.
We won't vote for this because we don't believe it could ever really be truly revenue neutral after it gets through Congress.
Yeah, we hear this concern sometimes from some offices. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, sure. I mean, sure, the Democrats will want some money for extending Social Security, and the Republicans will want to pay down the debt. So what we will end up is this with this revenue from higher energy prices paying for other things.
So it sounds like transparency is important to you. Is that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I see way too much waste and fraud.
That's a big concern for us as well. There's some examples of how something similar has worked in other places around the world. Would you like to hear more about that?
Oh, right. And I'm sure they're going to have a rousing conversation exploring just that. So let's debrief this again. I'm guessing you're noticing a theme. That best response that Don highlighted started with an acknowledgement and then followed with an open question. So if you can arm yourself with both of those practices, you're going to be in good standing. Don said in this case, you know, we hear this concern from some offices. Can you tell me a little bit more about that? And this led directly to him discovering the Member of Congress's underlying issue was that of transparency. At this point, I'll actually pass it to you, Tamara, if you want to do a quick wrap up and really highlighting how we can move past misconceptions.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Brett. So the important thing to take away from this demonstration isn't the content, but the process. So when first presented with an objection or concern, our natural inclination as humans is to come back with a fact. However, remember what Dr. Hayhoe and others have taught us. You must connect on shared values before someone is ready to accept what you have to say. In order to determine what's the underlying value behind their statement, we ask questions to draw out more information. We establish common ground by sharing their concern and connecting ourselves to that value. We ask for permission to proceed so that they are ready to hear what we have to say.
Awesome. All right, so let's move on to our next focus, which is overcoming objections to climate change. So I want to start by saying that this is not common. There's a huge misperception among some people, including folks of in our own organization, our own volunteers, that we face climate denial in congressional offices all the time. Every year, we actually see less and less of this, to the point now where we average over 20 engaged meetings for every one meeting that's hostile. However, we understand that the potential of dealing with climate denial in a congressional office can create anxiety for us, and it surely has for me in the past. So we're going to demonstrate a bad and better way to manage the situation, but I want you to know this rarely comes up, but we're going to move forward here, and in this case, I'm going to play the Member of Congress, and Tamara is going to play our CCL volunteer. So we'll start with a bad response. You know, Tamara, the satellite data shows the planet hasn't warmed in 15 years, so why should we do anything about this?
Well, 97% of peer-reviewed science papers say that it is warming, so you're ignoring the consensus of science. So now what you're doing is starting an argument. While satisfying to many of us, a better response might be the following. Notice how I'll try a few different elements.
You know, Tamara, the satellite data shows the planet hasn't warmed in 15 years. Why would we do anything about this?
I understand there's a place for uncertainty in the scientific process. We've got satellite measurements, surface measurements, ocean measurements, and sometimes they might provide varying information. If your office would find it useful, we'd love to set up a separate time to discuss the science of climate change and help get a trusted climate scientist from our local university to be there. Is that something your office would be interested in the future?
Oh, well, you know, I'm a state grad, so I'd be interested in hearing if you have any connections from any scientists there.
Great, will do. However, we're here today to discuss a policy that's good for people and the economy, will create jobs, save lives, and help us manage our emissions, and that is something that I care deeply about. deeply about. So even if we might not be on the same page with the science right now, I think the policy's other virtues, specifically job creation and saving lives, warrant your consideration. What are some of your thoughts about the policy?
All right, perfect. Two things to take away on a quick debrief on this one, and then we'll move forward to the next section. Number one is that Tamara wasn't confrontational, right? She acknowledged that the science can be confusing without telling Don that he was wrong. She extended a hand by offering to bring in an expert from their own home state and the university in their own nearby district. And I think this is much more comfortable, less combative than really just highlighting the consensus frame and then moving on for somebody being right and wrong. Leaves that door wider for breakthroughs than just saying no. The other key thing I think is that it's just better to help them find a way moving forward on their own terms and not forcing terms, you know, for us, which is climate concern on them. So I think an important question to ask ourselves is, if somebody ends up supporting our policy solely based on the economic benefits, should we care? You know, our fundamental mission is to create a livable world. So ultimately our goal is to pass that legislation that achieves that. And at least for me, it doesn't matter why a representative or senator actually may choose to vote to do that, as long as they do it. So I'll just pass it back actually to you, Don, to do a final wrap-up of this first section and share a couple of takeaways that stood out to you in these role plays.
Oh, the first takeaway for me is taking a moment before your meeting to separate your passion for this topic and the urgency we need to act on it. We are not there to score any rhetorical zingers in the meeting. If someone says something out of left field and it raises your blood pressure, keep it cool. It's okay. We have to remember that our pride and our ego is not as important as the planet. We want to assume positive intent. Oftentimes, others' concerns are genuine. Even if they're not, we should treat them as being genuine and take the time to practice acknowledging and identifying those concerns. If you can eliminate the innate bias that we have to blame others for being evil, wrong, or disingenuous, then we can not only change the context of the relationship, but also create the conditions with which we can develop a productive relationship with our members and staff. Remember, tell me more is your most powerful tool. I want to share a little story about Alabama representative, a Republican that our folks in Alabama met with. And he was a climate denier. And our volunteers did an outstanding job. They had a face-to-face meeting in the district. And that meeting went for 45 minutes. And that meeting wasn't, you know, 45 minutes of them arguing. If they jumped on him about the climate science immediately, that had been the end of the conversation. Instead, they talked to him about it. They drew him out. They had him discuss, you know, why he was skeptical of the climate science, talking about why was it important to him that this wasn't happening? Why was it important that climate change isn't real? And so then you begin to get to those fears, those underlying concerns, right? Once we get to that that core, then we can have a real conversation. So you can do this. It's absolutely feasible. So I just want to make sure that you let folks finish their points. Let them finish sharing their thoughts, because once they do that, they'll be much more willing to listen to what you have to say.
Awesome. Thanks, Don. I'm going to speak to some common temptations, a variety of temptations that tempt our palate and our psyche. So as tempting as it might be to go for the jugular or the ice cream or the sugar, here are some common temptations that you should avoid. So promising what you can't deliver. An example of this is that CCL will change its position on a key concern for the member. The bill is the bill that we're pushing at this point. And until it gets changed, it is what it is. Overstating our case. An example of this is promising with 100% certainty that all constituents will come out ahead with a dividend and asking for less than you want. We've discussed in other trainings that you want your primary ask to be that the member co-sponsor the Bipartisan Energy Innovation Act and in the Senate to make climate a bridge, not a wedge issue. Only go on your supporting ask when you know clearly what the office's reaction to your primary ask has been. And don't show up to argue the science, which we were just talking about. Keep the focus of the conversation on the relationship, learning about their priorities and values, and grounding elements of the Energy Innovation Act with those concerns. So if you are in a meeting where you're not a constituent, defer the constituent's plan and approach to their member of Congress. It can be really tempting to want to share your own well-formed ideas, but remember, We're there first and foremost to feature the support from the member of Congress's district. So if needed, make sure to coach and support, especially first-time attendees, to be ready to share some of the main points of your meeting goals.
Awesome. Thanks, Tamara. I'll tell you one more story real quick. I was in a meeting several years ago with a Republican from New Jersey, and he said, you know, you're in here telling me climate change is real. Tomorrow a group's going to be in telling me here that it's not. I just want a solution and know what to do about it. And so obviously this was a great opening for us, and we had members in the meeting, our volunteers, who jumped right into the science as to why it was true. And so that's a great example of where the science doesn't matter. We only want to present the solution. So I just want to leave you with that. Before we transition into our next section, where we're going to review some advanced skills that will gracefully get you out of bad situations. First of all, know that these situations can happen to anyone. So don't misattribute blame to yourself or your group for not doing something differently. This happens because we're human. Working with people is inherently challenging. There's only so much that we can get out of some meetings, and only worry about what you can control, because you can't control what you can't. So let's discuss a few situations that and a best way to handle them. Oh, I'll start by throwing that over to Tamara.
Okay, so let's talk about the angry CCL volunteer. So there have been some meetings where CCL volunteer has gotten a little heated. I've been in my fair share of those. And so as an example, the angry CCL volunteer might say something like, it's you guys in Texas with your oil companies who are stalling and making this worse. And your team leader can handle it by saying, Don, I appreciate your concern and the point you're wanting to make here. But let's turn it back to what Bob the staffer was just saying about.
Yeah, thanks, Tamara. And just a quick caveat, this is rare. But if you do begin a meeting with an office and that they quickly indicate that they're not on board with discussion climate action, here's some thoughts on what to do in that scenario. You don't want to get angry back at them or get defensive. What you want to do is acknowledge their concern, repeat back to them what they've been saying so they know they've been heard, use active listening skills, and let them know that we are not there to put them in a no-win situation. We want to highlight our goal and staying focused on the understanding that their thoughts and preferences for the best way to lower emissions and make it easy for them to support the Energy Innovation Act. It's easy to get derailed by anger and defensiveness, but if you can remember to come from a place of curiosity and validation, just as you would with all the other situations you're in, it will make all the difference in moving the conversation forward to where you originally wanted it to go. I'm going to talk a little bit about going off topic. This year, the time monitor role is being expanded to include keeping an eye on how much time CCL members are spending talking relative to how much the office is talking. It's going to be key for your group to remind each other ahead of time that one of the goals of the meeting is to get the staffer or member talking at least half of the meeting time. We've all come across great talkers in our lives. My father is one of them. If this happens in your meeting, here are a few considerations. Wait until there's a breaking point, acknowledge their position, and pivot back to why we are there in the office. Where is it best to interrupt? Use your experience. You don't want to cut someone off in mid-sentence, but take your opportunities where you can get them and be friendly yet firm in jumping in to redirect the conversation.
Those are good points, Don. I appreciate that. Sometimes I've been in a meeting and it can be handy if you know that there's somebody that might tend to be a talker, if you as the lead put yourself next to them and you have a decent amount of relationship, you can also try to get their eye contact and just use some nonverbal cues to help move the conversation along. Also, that's worked in the past. So let's talk about another challenging situation, getting pushback from like-minded folks. Me being from the left coast, I live in Portland, and we have a lot of people who we think would be in agreement with what we're wanting to do, yet we get a decent amount of pushback. So you'll meet people who agree with you on climate and who understand that we need to act, but they may favor another policy or have reservations with the Energy Innovation Act. Or you might encounter offices that feel really frustrated and focus on President Trump or the EPA's rollback of hard-fought environmental protections. So how should we handle that situation? There are a couple things that I'll point out. So we want to make sure that we show appreciation for their important work on this issue. Gratitude wins for sure. You share appreciation with somebody and their walls just go down either completely or by quite a bit. We also want to acknowledge that we share a common goal and acknowledge the worthiness of their plan or ideas. Again, not just buttering them up, but really a genuine finding, if you can, a genuine appreciation for what they're working on. It's far too easy to get upset with people already concerned about climate change who don't agree on our exact approach. And the slight differences should never let us forget that we're working towards the same goals. If you can, optimally, refrain from negativity. Don't bash their plan or their idea. They're proud of their ideas. That's definitely going to derail a meeting to insert some negativity in there. And then let them know that we appreciate their idea and their work to address this important issue. For us, we've chosen to be laser focused on this one approach to increase the chances that it becomes a reality. But, you know, one thing that I often talk about is the concept of a wheel. And, you know, if solving the climate crisis is in the middle, there are a bunch of spokes. Like, in order to have a wheel that's true, you have to have all of those spokes be really strong. So each approach has its place. Another hot button issue is keeping focus. I've definitely been in meetings where the conversations, we start talking about who knows what, the color of the leaves in Portland. And so there are some issues that can elicit strong responses from either side, these issues that we're talking about. So Dawn's going to go over some suggested good responses in Republican offices, while I'll give you suggested good responses in Democratic offices. What we don't want you to do is be inauthentic. You shouldn't say anything that doesn't work for you. The people you meet with will be able to tell if you're being inauthentic, and it won't work nearly as well, if at all. If the conversation gets off track, redirect it back to the reason for our visit. And let's start with the Green New Deal. Dawn, care to begin with the Republican office perspective?
Absolutely. Thanks, Tara. So in a Republican office, you may hear, I'm not a supporter of the Green New Deal and its big government proposals. Well, bad response would be, oh, we know you wouldn't support the Green New Deal. A better response is, I understand that. The Energy Innovation Act is a conservative approach to climate change because it simply corrects the market failure. This policy does not increase the size of government, is revenue neutral, and lets the market go to work, letting the best energy source win.
In the Democrats' office, you might hear, I'm a big supporter of the Green New Deal. Is your policy part of the Green New Deal? A bad response might sound like, no, the Green New Deal is not legislation and we don't support it. A better response might sound like this. Thanks for asking. We really appreciate the focus of the Green New Deal on reducing emissions. The Green New Deal is an excellent and admirable set of policy goals. I like to think of it this way. The original New Deal was actually a collection of over 40 different pieces of individual legislation, and I see the Energy Innovation Act as the first step in what is needed to address climate change.
Awesome. Thanks, Tara. That's fantastic. So let's jump over to nuclear power, and we'll start with the idea of nuclear in a Republican office. Nuclear has to be a part of the conversation. It must be on the table. A bad response would be, why don't you talk to the folks at Fukushima? A better response is, thanks for sharing this important policy for your office. It's great that you want to include nuclear power as a part of the solution, and the Energy Innovation Act model will do just that. Similar policies are supported by nuclear companies, unlike many other policies. Placing a fee on carbon gives nuclear energy and renewable energy the same degree of support compared to fossil fuels. Thus, it lets nuclear compete with renewables and other means of emission reductions on a fair, level playing field. Would you like to hear more about that?
So I'm going to talk about nuclear in Democratic offices. So it might sound like this in the Democratic office. So your report shows that nuclear will increase under your plan. A bad response might be, well, we got to get our energy from somewhere. A better response might be, thanks for sharing your concern about nuclear. It sounds like fuel safety, environmental impacts, and figuring out alternatives are important to your office. We recognize there are important, passionate views on nuclear energy's role in the transition to 100% renewable energy. TCL's focus is on accelerating the overall shift worldwide to a clean energy economy in a time frame that matches the scale of the challenge we face. So how do you think, in your office, we could best balance grid stability and baseload power while transitioning to renewables? So again, ending on a question, an open-ended question, can really move the conversation to where you want it to be. So I'm also going to talk about regulatory adjustment concern from Democratic offices. This is something that I spend a lot of time talking and thinking and collaborating on in Portland and then in the region that I work in. And so for tonight's tricky scenarios, using open-ended questions from the practice of motivational interviewing is a helpful way to dive in deeper to the members' thoughts. And while it may be tempting to think that the way to reach our elected officials is to find the perfect argument that will persuade them, nobody really likes to be approached that way, even if it starts with a very nice appreciation. You're great, but... So as a result, we've been working on applying the techniques of motivational interviewing to our meetings. A key idea is to ask strategic, open questions that facilitate the member talking positively in their own words about the things that will move him or her to positive action. And then we can strategically reflect back the things that they have said to let them know that we heard them and to highlight the things that will let him or her move forward. So in a Democrat's office, you may hear this. I don't like that HR 763 limits regulations. We need every tool we have to solve climate change, and we can't wait 10 years to see if your bill is working. A bad response might be, you're right, I've totally wasted my money coming here. And a better response might be, thanks for sharing these important concerns. It sounds like the urgency of acting on climate and the rigor of any policy that does so are what matter most to you, and they do to us as well. We appreciate that many people want to keep every option on the table. We take the approach that given the recent IPCC 1.5 degree special report findings, it's crucial to both act now with policies that parties can get behind, as well as pave the way for enduring systemic solutions. So part of me can completely relate to your point and desire to have every option on the table. It's important for us to move forward and do it quickly, and taking tools off the table doesn't seem to make sense to me either. But there's another part of me that wanted to understand this concern better, and I dug into some of the details here, wondering if it's really clear what the situation regarding regulations and the pause is. So can I share some of these with you? So assuming that they say, well, sure, even if they're hesitant, they might be hesitant, but they say yes. So then I might say something like, well, for me, it's reassuring to know that, for one, the Energy Innovation Act will cut U.S. emissions by 2030 nine times as much as the Clean Power Plan would have if it had gone into effect. Also, the bill only narrowly affects EPA regulations on greenhouse gases covered by the carbon price. Nothing else, and only this as long as emissions targets are being met. And the last thing I want to bring up is that this bill gives clear direction to the EPA from Congress that would prevent the type of court challenges that have hampered policies based on the current authority of the Clean Air Act. So things are getting stuck in the courts, in other words, and the Energy Innovation Act can alleviate that. So we'd really like to brainstorm with you. Which of these or perhaps other aspects of the bill, your concerns, would be helpful to discuss or explore with more precision?
On the flip side, we can also look at things in Republican offices. And in this scenario, I'm going to talk a little bit about lack of support in the district. So in a Republican office, you may hear, I'm not really interested in pursuing any type of action I don't hear from my constituents supporting. So a bad response would be, hello, where are your polling experts? Any recent study shows it's a clear trend you're not addressing. I actually really like that response, but it's terrible. A much better response is, well, we entirely understand your desire to focus on lawmaking that your district is asking for. May I ask what types of environmental concerns you mainly hear about in your district? Again, we entirely understand your desire to focus on lawmaking that your district is asking for. We have some interesting tools. Both recent polling indicates 75% of conservatives under 40 support similar policies, and a mapping software that researchers at Yale have put together shows that America's climate change beliefs and policy support at the congressional level. So we can actually show you support in your district for action on climate change. Is this the type of information that would be useful for your office? So if so, walk them through the findings, or you can always send that as a follow-up, and that can be your start for a conversation to set up another meeting.
All right, so let's do one last thing. Let's actually kind of roll this all up into an actual full meeting scenario. This is going to be kind of the last thing we'll do, and then we'll stick around for questions. So, but what I'm going to do is actually kind of pass it back to both of you to really kind of, in this one, Tamara played the role of the constituent. Don, you can be a liberal member of Congress, and essentially you're just going to put advanced listening and communication skills in action for somebody that's already a co-sponsor of the Energy Innovation Act, and is justifiably frustrated about the lack of progress they see in Congress on this issue. All right, so here we go.
Quite frankly, Tamara, I'm fed up with the lack of progress on this issue. And if Republicans are so important to have on board, I wish they would just show up. Why aren't more of them on this piece of legislation?
Yeah, thanks for sharing, Representative. That's a really great question. I can't speak to individual members' decisions, but I do know that we're talking today with over 500 offices to convince more to join on the merits of this proposal. One of the original co-sponsors, Republican Francis Rooney from Florida, has an American Conservation Union score of 96. So he is a conservative Republican, and he's outspoken about his concern for climate change. And I find this kind of cross-party action heartening. Given the lack of trust today is indeed low, which makes working together more challenging, but no less important. How do you resist the pull to just be on the attack against the Republican Party?
There is a lot that's very frustrating when trying to work with them, to be honest. I can't believe their policy priorities and the way they've just shoved through everything without due process. It makes me really angry at times. But I'm here to get something done. And I know that a few of my Republican colleagues also, you know, see what's going on. They see it in their district. So I'll try and stay focused and see if I can get anything done, or at least as much as possible.
So I'm hearing that you find it frustrating and really don't like it when you don't even get to have a chance to have input on legislation. That totally makes sense. And yet you want to get as much as possible done. And it also sounds like you have a few relationships across the aisle that are helpful to you in staying positive. Which across the aisle relationships have you found to be the most productive that we might be able to help leverage on climate with our grassroots network?
To be honest, not many. But on the recent opioid epidemic, there's been legislation I've been working on with Representative Smith's office, and an ongoing work with infrastructure that I've been working closely with Representative Jones's office. I'm not sure if either would be interested in signing up for a climate-focused bill, but I haven't asked them either.
And I also want to thank you for your hard work on both of these other issues, as well as your recommendations for who else might be open to collaborating or co-sponsoring the Energy Innovation Act. So given all the momentum behind climate change legislation this session, and by the way, thanks for your recent vote on HR 9. So given the momentum with Democrats and leadership in the House, what are your other top priorities on energy and climate?
Well, you know, I continue to put a high priority on renewable energy and transitioning us to deploy more energy storage solutions. CCL should like that because it will lower emissions, and it's also something with broad support from many conservatives.
Yeah, we would like to see these innovations take place as well. Where do you see the best path for working with Republicans to get things done in Congress this session?
Again, I'm not really sure. I know since the launch of the Green New Deal, a policy I've proudly co-sponsored, the only real alternative solution seems to be research and development. That's the only thing conservatives are willing to fund. I just don't know. There are some things that other representatives have put forward in the Senate. Senator Alexander put forward the New Manhattan Project. He focused on nuclear energy. But my team really hasn't followed up on any of these specifics given our other priorities.
Yeah, entirely understood. Would you be interested in finding out more about 4 bipartisan bills that have been introduced this Congress that could be useful ways to encourage further bipartisanship on climate in Congress?
Yeah, what do you got?
Well, we're not formally endorsing these bills, but CCL's legislative team has found all 4 of them complementary to the Energy Innovation Act and address policy issues that a carbon price does not. We can jump into each of them, and we look forward to your thoughts on continuing to build out support.
Awesome. Well, first off, the Use It Act sponsorship definitely jumps out at me. I think that this is a...
All right, let's stop here. I don't want to go too much into the weeds there on the Use It Act. All right, so we're at the top of the hour here, and what I'll just kind of highlight again is just the final summary. You can follow these ways of really being able to highlight any way to bring it back forward and focus on being your authentic self and practicing this 3-part practice of acknowledging, listening for shared values, connecting to a point about our policy that you think demonstrates that connection, and then asking a question to get their input and further that discussion up. So let's close by just especially acknowledging that if this is your first time jumping into meetings on the Hill, we hope that this has been a really helpful and instructive training. If you're feeling still a little bit anxious, know that's totally normal. Practicing putting these different communication activities into play is really, I think, going to be key And doing that in your own modeling of what you anticipate with your meeting is also a really helpful activity. So as long as you lead with appreciation, respect, and you leave them with the opportunity to have another meeting, I consider that a victory. Here is our contact information. If anyone's interested, we always recommend checking out the forums. That's where a lot of the discussion's happening around anything connected to this upcoming conference or other questions you might have in general. And here are Dawn and Tamara and Mai's email addresses. We are so grateful for all of you making time again tonight. Whether you're tuning in later or listening to it live, it's your involvement that is shifting the dial on this issue. And to help us celebrate the end of tonight's webinar, I'll pass it to you, Tamara, to close us with an inspirational quote from the one and only Margaret Mead.
Great. We can't hear this enough. So she says, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has."
Hear, hear. Thank you. This is wonderful. Really appreciate all your hard work.